I'm very glad to be able to welcome to Sounds of Dissent Ali Abu Nima, the founder of the Electronic Intifada, a website reporting information from and about the Middle East. Welcome to the program, Ali Abu Nima.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
I'm curious to begin asking you about the Palestinian election. Mahmoud Abbas was chosen as the Palestinian leader. Prime Minister Ariel Sharon of Israel congratulated him on Tuesday for the landslide victory in the election to replace former Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat. And then just in the last couple of days, Ariel Sharon has cut off communications with Mahmoud Abbas. Your comment?
Yes, things are moving even faster than the most pessimistic predictions. But what we've been saying all along is that the election is just a distraction, and it's led to a lot of mass euphoria in the media, but this is not connected with anything reality-based. First of all, the thing to note about the election is that it wasn't the landslide that was portrayed. Fewer than half of the eligible voters in the occupied territories bothered to participate, and mostly because people just don't see that the head of the Palestinian Authority has any way to influence their lives. An example, just the day after the election, the Israeli army revealed a plan to demolish another 3,000 homes of Palestinian refugees in the Rafah refugee camp at the southern end of the Gaza Strip as part of Israel's plan to seal the Gaza Strip from the outside world and turn it into a giant internment camp for 1.5 million Palestinians. And of course, the Palestinian Authority has no power to protect its people against that or against any of the other ongoing human rights abuses. The next day, a Palestinian man driving his pregnant wife to the hospital in Gaza was shot dead by the Israeli army in an incident that's repeated almost daily. And of course, the Palestinian Authority can't do anything about that. And the distraction that the election provides is a distraction from the reality that Israel and the United States are using this to turn our attention away from what's really going on, which is continued and accelerating Israeli construction of settlements for Jews only all across the occupied West Bank. And interestingly, the day before the election, the Israeli newspaper Haaretz reported in detail that Israel was drawing up plans for settlement construction in 120 settlements across the occupied West Bank with the full coordination, approval, and knowledge of the Bush administration. So in this context, there is zero chance of peace, at least based on the negotiated settlement, because there's absolutely no pressure on Israel to move towards such a peace.
My guest is Ali Abu Nima, the founder of the website, theelectronicintifada.net, that features reports from the Middle East, especially the less frequently reported side of this conflict. Ali Abu Nima, you've commented that the Palestinian election is predetermined in some manner, that the Palestinian Authority and many members of the international community, as well as Israel, have done everything they can to ensure the outcome is predetermined. Would you describe that and describe what might have been another outcome?
Well, that's right. I mean, there are so many things to note on this issue. Just this morning, the Associated Press reports that two senior officials of the Palestine Central Elections Commission have resigned in protest at the amount of pressure they faced from Mahmoud Abbas's Fatah movement in order to manipulate the result. And they charged that the fraud had a significant impact on the outcome of the election. Not only that, but before the election, there was immense pressure on another popular candidate, Marwan Barghouti, who is in an Israeli prison, who stood, and all the polls were showing that he would have won. But there was intense pressure again from the Palestinian Authority and from the international community that he not run. I mean, the whole point of an election is it's supposed to be contested. They didn't want that. And then the other candidates who did stand against Mahmoud Abbas faced intense harassment from the Israeli authorities. Mustafa Barghouti, who was the runner-up, was arrested 3 times by the Israelis for trying to campaign in Jerusalem, the largest city in the occupied West Bank and the largest Palestinian city. 2 of the candidates weren't allowed out of the Gaza Strip, so they could hardly campaign. And, of course, the entire security services and civil service of the Palestinian Authority, about 50,000 people, were all working for Mahmoud Abbas. So that's the situation inside. And then we have to recognize also that only a third of Palestinians live in the occupied territories. The other 2/3 live in exile outside their country. Millions of people in refugee camps in Jordan, Syria, Lebanon. They live in Canada, in the United States, all over the world. And they were not allowed to participate in the election. In contrast, of course, to the enormous efforts being made to allow Iraqis outside their country to vote in the election if it's held on January 30th.
Could those Palestinians in the diaspora not travel to Palestine to participate?
Of course they couldn't. Of course not. I mean, the refugees are refugees because Israel, which controls the occupied territories, doesn't allow them back. This is the core of the conflict that all of this is supposed to distract us from, that Israel was created by the displacement and in many cases forced expulsion of all these Palestinian refugees. That's why we have a conflict. Israel won't allow them back, not to vote, not to live, not to visit, not for any reason.
What efforts have been made to allow people from Afghanistan and Iraq to return to those countries to vote?
Well, if they don't want to return or can't return, enormous efforts have been made to allow them to vote out of country. So 750,000 Afghan refugees were enabled to vote in Pakistan. And then Iraqis are going to be allowed to vote in the United States, in Canada, even in Israel, if you can imagine that Iraqi Jews who emigrated to Israel are entitled to vote in the Iraqi election. So in Jordan, even in Syria, there's out-of-country voting for Iraqis, which is remarkable because Syrian citizens can't even vote in elections, free elections in their own country, and yet Iraqis in Syria are going to be allowed to vote in the Iraqi election. So it's clear that it's possible. If the international community were interested in including Palestinian refugees in a peace process instead of marginalizing them and vilifying them as has been done, that the technology, the will, and the funding exist to do that.
My guest is Ali Abu Nima, who maintains the news website about the Middle East, electronicintifada.net. Ali Abu Nima, you'd reported that a lot of news outlets had reported that almost 70% of potential Palestinian voters in the territories voted. You say the number is actually below 50%.
That's correct. A lot of news organizations misquoted or misstated what the Central Elections Commission in of Palestine had said. What they had said was that 70% of registered voters had voted, and based on the figures they released, that would appear accurate. But what they also said is that 1/3 of Palestinian voters did not bother to register or couldn't register. So, in fact, only 46% of eligible voters, of the people who could have voted if they'd wanted to, bothered to vote. The majority of Palestinians sat this out And of course, when I say the majority, I mean the majority in the occupied territories only, sat this out because they just didn't see it having any real impact on their lives. And they saw also how manipulated it was and that there was no real contest. It was a coronation for the man that the international peace process industry has designated as the person they want to do business with.
Why do you believe Mahmoud Abbas is that person? What has he done? What does the international community see in him and his record?
What they see in him is someone who has been prepared to adopt the Israeli narrative that the Palestinians are responsible for violence. So he's repeatedly condemned the Intifada, the Palestinian uprising, and accepted the narrative that Palestinians started the violence. When it's a matter of simple chronology, anyone who wants to go back and check the news reports will see that in the first month of the Palestinian uprising, dozens of Palestinians were killed before a single Israeli was killed. According to the Israeli army, the Israeli army fired 1.3 million bullets at Palestinian demonstrators in the first weeks of the uprising. And so it was Israel that decided to respond to mass protests with force, with violence, and to militarize the Intifada. But Abbas has accepted the Israeli narrative. He's also accepted Israeli proposals on such things as Jerusalem, which is that Israel be allowed to annex all of occupied Jerusalem, and they'll simply take the little village of Abu Dis near Jerusalem, rename it Al-Quds, which is the Arabic name for Jerusalem, and then say there, now the Palestinians have a capital in Jerusalem. That's a lot like taking the little town of Elizabeth, New Jersey, renaming it New York City, and saying there, now the people of New Jersey have control of New York City. It's this kind of nonsensical proposal that has pleased the international community and made Mahmoud Abbas so popular with them.
Ali Abu Nima, I know that you have limited time with us right at this moment. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we look forward to speaking with you again.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure, and there's lots more coverage of the election at electronicintifada.net.
Ali Abu Nima is the founder of the news website electronicintifada.net.